Hello there. My name's Craig Meister. Hello, Craig Meister here. And I'm so excited to talk to you tonight about where you are in the college admissions process. Many of you may be seniors or parents of seniors. And I want to talk tonight really because so many seniors and parents of seniors have asked me questions in recent weeks about what they should do now that the world has changed so dramatically. So I'm really happy to be here in obviously very unpleasant circumstances, because the way the world has changed is certainly not what we had all hoped for in 2020, but it is the world we find ourselves in. And so with a very big investment like college on the line for so many and so soon in the case of the class of 2020, it definitely is worth taking a step back, holding up, thinking about it long and hard to make sure that the plans that you thought you were going to have this time of year in 2020 are the plans you want to maintain as we look ahead to the summer and the fall and the matriculation process for the class of 2020. We can also talk a little bit about the class of 2021 and what this will mean for them as coronavirus or COVID-19, no matter what you call it, continues to play a real factor in many students and families and colleges' decision-making processes over the coming weeks, months, and God forbid, years. But I want to start out with just saying this. If you are here, and thank you so much if you are here live, definitely feel free to type a question to me. As we are live, you have that ability, and I will try very much to answer your question. I do, however, want to go through some talking points, if you will, to make sure that I cover what I want to cover tonight, and what I promised I would cover tonight to those parents who were asking me some questions about this in sort of a holistic manner. You know, going into the 2020 year, we found ourselves in a situation where most American colleges and universities were already on the precipice financially. They had overextended themselves and were increasingly looking at ways to become more attractive to students so as to keep their application numbers up or increasing and to try to make it appear that they were increasingly selective as a result of having more applications from every passing year. Now, on the financial side of things, lots of American colleges and universities are highly dependent on tuition dollars. Not all, but most. And so what's happening right now and what's happened since mid-March, when all the colleges in the United States basically became online, universities and colleges, is the residential income and the tuition income is in huge doubt for 2020 and 2021. And so what happened within days, really, and some of the colleges closing their campuses, was many colleges are now officially, for the 2020-2021 admission cycle, SAT and ACT optional. And these are colleges that never were considering it beforehand. Others were considering it beforehand, and they used the crisis as an example or as a reason why they were going to go test optional. But schools like Tufts, schools like Amherst, schools like Pomona now, within the last few weeks, have all gone test optional for the class of 2021. And the reason I bring this up in the context of what a high school senior in the class of 2020 should be thinking is the colleges know that many families' financial situations have changed dramatically in the last few weeks. And many students are going to be really contemplating the logic of going to a college or university that's highly selective if it costs upwards of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $70,000 in tuition, room, and board for maybe just an online experience, even if they do get in. So one of the questions I have been receiving most from current high school seniors is, you know, maybe I should try again next year. Maybe I should just not go to college in the fall of 2020, because it looks as though colleges are making abundantly clear, not all, but many, that they are going to have lower admission standards for 2021's fall entry than for 2020's fall entry. And so in response to that question, it's always going to be dependent on your current situation, sort of the colleges you got yourself into 2020 versus the one you could get, the ones you could get yourself into 2021. But what I would definitely say is if you were aiming for one of the schools that has already announced that it will be test optional next year, but was not test optional this year, and testing was one of the things that was definitely holding you up or maybe limiting your chances of getting in this year, and you didn't get in this year or you have been waitlisted this year, A, you may want to wait to see if the waitlist comes to you, because I think more colleges will be going into their waitlist this year because of a lot of families' financial situations changing and a lot of families wanting to keep their students closer to home. But B, if that doesn't occur, this year more than many years, I would say definitely consider potentially a gap year of some sort if you want to get into what was considered to be a more selective university in the past. Next year, if they're now obviously lowering their admission standards by not requiring SAT or ACT scores of applicants next year. I will say, even in the case of Cornell, they're not officially test optional next year in terms of that terminology, but they are literally going to accept students, or they're saying they're willing to accept students who are unable or unwilling to submit SAT and ACT scores because of the lack of test dates available to students in the class of 2021. So, I hope we're still on. It says my connection is unstable and they're trying to reconnect. So hopefully I'm back online. If I got knocked off, I apologize. This is, you know, we don't go live often, so I apologize if the connection is unstable. So what I will just say in wrapping that bit up is you definitely do want to consider potentially holding off a year for the sole purpose of if a college that was very high on your list this year that rejected you is now all of a sudden test optional next year, you may as well try your hand at getting in next year if the testing was a potential real important factor as to why you didn't get in this year. So we have a question from Equilibrium. That's a lovely name. Yes, I'm a current junior scared of my medical internship being canceled. Well, that's a wonderful case, a situation to be in. It's nice to have an internship. A lot of students don't even have an internship opportunity this summer, so you were very smart to get an internship in the first place, but you are right to be concerned that an in-person internship might be canceled for summer 2020. I have already worked with a number of students who've had their summer plans scuttled, whether they be studying abroad, going to a pre-college program on a college campus, or taking part in an internship in a business setting, or even some students had internships in lab settings. And all of those settings are ones where many people often will congregate in close quarters. And without knowing how people are going to do so in the summer of 2020, without while also social distancing, some employers and some corporations and some nonprofits are pulling back the opportunities for internships in person. But hopefully, in your case, Equilibrium, we will have a situation where maybe your internship will allow you to do it online. I mean, we can only hope. Because there is still a lot you can learn and experience from the perspective of learning and supporting an employer while online and in a remote setting, though obviously some are easier to do than others. Obviously, a cooking internship would be harder to do, or one that you really have to get your hands dirty on versus one where you can maybe be doing more research with open source or other information that you can access online. But I wish you the very best. And I do think that it is not at all unrealistic to think that many students will be in the same position as you, potentially not having the summer resume items or item that they thought they would be having going into the summer, going into the senior year in high school. But just realize you can only make do with what is available to you. So if that opportunity is now closed, you can still do your very best to make the most of this summer. There are so many opportunities, believe it or not, that will open up and will be existing both online and in the real world this summer for students to act in an entrepreneurial way and also test their pre-professional skills, whether it be running groceries to neighbors' homes, starting a blog, starting a business, either virtual or in the real world. Don't let the fact that this virus is spreading scare you from trying your hand at any of those ideas or all of the above, especially since it seems as though the virus is particularly light on individuals who are 18 years old or younger. I also want to cover another topic that's been brought to me a lot in the last few days, and that's that's the question of, is a college or university in the United States, any of them, whether it be Harvard or the no-name college or university down the road from you, are any of them worth it online for tuition exceeding $30,000 or $50,000 or in some crazy cases, $70,000 a year, though in many cases, a $70,000 number would include room and board. And what I honestly have to tell students is, this is an opinion, so buckle up, but in my opinion, so much of the college experience at the highly selective colleges and universities in the United States is not the value added of the in-classroom experience itself, but the value added that comes from what happens outside of the classroom, the networking, the extracurricular experiences, the pre-professional development experiences. But again, I can't underscore enough the networking experiences that happen on campuses like Princeton, like Northwestern, like Tulane, like USC, like Stanford, et cetera, et cetera. So if you are in the class of 2020 and you were accepted to one of these highly selective colleges or universities, let's say the top 100 US News and World Report colleges or universities, or the top or research universities, and let's say the top 50 to 60 liberal arts colleges on the US News and World Report rankings list. If you were accepted to one of these schools and you are scheduled to be paying them $50,000 plus for tuition and room and board all in, and again, in some cases, $70,000 upwards for room and board and tuition this year, and you don't know if you're going to be actually able to visit that campus in person this year, at least for the fall, what I would tell most people is, in my opinion, no college or university in the United States is worth $50,000 plus for being online. Because you aren't able to, at least this fall, they won't have developed an infrastructure yet to really create a networking experience like the one that would exist in a residential college community, like at the Quad at Penn, or, you know, living in the dorms at any of these high-ranked, very selective colleges or universities. Being on those campuses, living there 24/7, interacting with peers in your year and other years, professors, and other professionals on those campuses, that's where the value added exists at these colleges and universities. And that's the reason why they've kept their numbers low enrollment-wise. And all these Ivy League schools, for instance, could have gone to online learning years ago and accepted as many thousands of people as University of Phoenix or Walden University, but they don't do it because they really acknowledge the fact that the colleges themselves at that level are as in demand much more for the fact that they are sort of like an elite nightclub than they are for the fact that the education you experience at Princeton or Cornell or Brown or Penn is that much more superior to the ones you would experience at University of Tennessee or Mizzou or Arizona State or Florida State or Miami. They know that. Psychologically speaking, they understand it. So that's why they've never gone online for full-fledged degree programs, with very few exceptions. So they have kept their enrollment numbers artificially low because they know their cachet comes at these highly selective colleges and universities from being an elite club, sort of like an elite nightclub. So if you are not able to take advantage of all the things that come with going to an elite club, then a lot of the value disappears from going to these colleges or universities, because basically all you have at that point is the nameplate, what you can post on Facebook or wherever it is, your resume on LinkedIn, that you went to this college. And that may be, that is worth something. I won't deny that. But you're, every semester that you're paying full freight for an experience that is less than a full residential experience is something I would be very concerned about. So I would frankly say, unless you've been accepted to a college that is extremely selective for a program or for a program that is extremely selective, if you are finding yourself in a financial bind, A, go back to that college and ask if they can use their professional judgment and change your financial aid numbers for fall 2020. But if they're unable or unwilling to do that, you really have to ask yourself, is it worth maybe delaying going to that college or university and trying to defer, if they'll let you defer for a year, so you can actually have a full-fledged freshman year experience with all the networking that comes with it, with new students and just the overall social experience. And remember, the class of 2020 has already missed out on so many other social milestones. They're not going to have prom in many cases. They're not going to have their full-fledged graduation. They're not going to have their experience of saying goodbye to their teachers and their classmates in an in-school environment. So I can completely understand why, from a social perspective, many students are leery about starting a college that they thought they were going to go to in person residentially in an online format. Whether or not it's worth it or not really will come down to what your package was financially beforehand, what your family can afford, and frankly, also how selective that college or university is, and if it's worth missing out on it this year to try again in next for the year ahead, and hopefully it will be residential, or try your hand at just applying to other schools. I mean, obviously, all of those things will factor in, but I would say unless you're really looking at the very tippity top of the selectivity rankings, and or the program that you're applying for is one that you just know you were meant for in terms of fit professionally, academically speaking, and you don't want to let that go. Unless you're in a very good fit situation for the fall, and the only thing that's really wrong about it is, oh, maybe you have to endure one semester, maybe two semesters, maybe more, online, then I would probably still go forward with it. But if you were in any way doubtful about the value proposition of a college beforehand, and you've already deposited or you're about to deposit, and you don't know if it's really a great fit for you, maybe you feel like you could have done better in terms of the programming, or if you tried hard on your applications, or if you had slightly higher scores or something. If you already were having doubts about going to that college in the fall, whether you've deposited yet or not, I think the prospect of going online to that college should definitely give you an extra severe layer of pause in order for you to determine whether or not it's really worth jumping headfirst into an online learning environment for potentially up as much as a semester or more. Because while a lot of your focus, if you're a student at the high school level, a high school senior, has been on, oh my gosh, I got to go to college in fall 2020, and you've been planning for this event your whole life, and you felt like everything was going that direction, life will go on, and life hopefully will return to a semblance of residential normal at some of these colleges, though there's no guarantee. 1 year delay may be exactly what you needed to get a better application together, whether you're going to be a more mature writer. Maybe you're going to be able to take an SAT or ACT again, or maybe you can take some online classes and apply as a transfer student. Maybe start community college and apply to that dream college as a transfer student. I mean, there are a lot of opportunities that can open up to you. So I don't want anyone to think that just because I signed on the dotted line last week, last month, 5 months ago when I got into early decision, your life, all of our lives have changed so much in just the last 2 months. That if there was ever a time to renege on a deposit, and of course you can tell I'm not paid by colleges and universities because no college or university wants a college admissions consultant or college counselor to be saying this, but I will say it because I am looking out for, and I've always looked out for, the actual student and family. If there's ever been an opportunity to renege on a deposit, basically walk away from a deposit and say to the college, you know what, I changed my mind. This is the year, because so much has changed for families financially. So much has changed in terms of the actual college experience that students will be experiencing in the fall. And so much has changed probably from the perspective of the students in terms of how they've grown and how they've changed, and their perspective on the world and their value system has changed. That this would be the year, I would think, that if you really are having any doubts, don't feel guilty reneging or depositing and then saying, you know what, just keep the deposit. I'm not coming. I'm not paying the tuition. I'm not coming. Because a deposit, while it's a lot to lose for anyone in many cases, is not worth going into an experience you're already doubtful about. And if you really feel like you could try again, or it's just not the right fit to begin with. If you feel like it's the right fit in every way other than the fact that you're going to be stuck in your house maybe for a few months online learning, then I would say follow through with it, because it doesn't sound like you have anything that even comes close to being a good match even though this is not what you dreamed of, i.e. online learning. But if you were already having doubts, I think that that is something that you should definitely consider a lot before the May 1st deposit date deadline, if the college is still making you reply that date. If you have until June 1st to reply now because they've extended the deposit deadline, again, keep thinking about it. And if you already have deposited months ago because of you got getting an ED or EA, but now you're having real doubts, and if they're for a financial reason, don't be shy about calling that college or university, calling their financial aid office, and telling them that your financial situation has changed as a family. What, if anything, can that college do for you to potentially use their professional judgment in changing your financial aid package? But if it's for a non-financial reason, you just don't think the college is something you would want to go to if it's just going to be in your bedroom online, then you really have to think long and hard about whether or not it's worth it. I personally think there's a reason why those colleges that do offer full online degree programs, whether they be for-profit or not-for-profit, none of them have tuition of $30,000. I mean, that's insane. Arizona State Online, Purdue Online, Walden Online, none of these colleges will have yearly tuitions in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s. Yet most of the colleges that are highly selected that have gone to a fully online format for spring 2020 and that may continue on a fully online format in fall 2020, they're going to still try to charge you what was their retail price when they were full-fledged residential colleges. And yes, it costs money to transition them to online learning, and they'll make the argument that it costs money to develop that infrastructure. But there's a reason why online degrees traditionally cost much less than going to Princeton, going to Syracuse, going to Penn State. It's because the experience of going there is what a lot of that money is going for, whether it's in the tuition bundle, whether it's in the room and board bundle, whether it's in just anything that they're charging you for, the life fitness expenses, et cetera. That's where a lot of the money is going, for the experience and the people you network with. It's very hard, even though Zoom is wonderful and Google Chats is wonderful and all these online platforms are wonderful, there's a real inhibition and an inability to network as much with online learning. And again, unless the college name is really big and sexy and or the program is perfect fit for you, I think everyone should be giving some second thoughts to whether or not the college they have matriculated into for the fall is worth the money that the colleges are going to want them to continue to spend for online learning. You could potentially always get into that, and I'm not promising, but you could always potentially get into that college later on as a transfer student or after a gap year applying again. Now, again, that's very hard to do at the very elite schools, or the ones that want to consider themselves elite, the ones that are highly selective, because, you know, especially if you pull out on deposit and try again, they're not going to want you after that. But if you can defer, you know, maybe you could have the full-fledged freshman year experience next year. I also wanted to cover something else, which is the topic of double depositing. I will also say before I answer this question that a lot of families have asked me in the last few weeks, if you are viewing the chat right now and you do have a question, I'm more than happy to answer it. So feel free to write your question or comment in the live chat since we are on YouTube Live. But this question I've gotten a lot. What are the ethical considerations I should be giving to double depositing if I want to hedge my bets? Because one of the colleges I'm interested in requires a May 1st reply by date, whereas the other has pushed their reply by date till June 1st, and I haven't visited either one or both of those schools, and I really am scared about depositing at the wrong one. Traditionally, if there's a normal year, I would say, you know, you really don't ethically want to double deposit. Has there ever been a true huge penalty for doing so? No, other than the loss of the money that is in the deposit by double depositing, since you're not going to get it back at one. But again, this year, and seeing how, frankly, all of these colleges have treated their current students in terms of not, in many cases, not refunding the full amount of room and board for the last couple months that the students are not having the colleges are not having residential on their campuses. At the end of the day, college is a business decision in the United States. And now, again, this is not, we're talking about the United States of America. In the United States of America, whether it's a public college or a private college, it's an industry. In the United States, it's not the same way as it is in Canada, the UK, and Europe. So from a business perspective, many families, in my opinion, should consider double depositing if they don't know the right fit for their student and they feel as though there is a possibility that by the end of June, or let's say by the end of May, and a June 1 deposit by date that's been pushed back from May 1st, they may have an opportunity to visit the additional college or two that will allow them to determine whether or not a school is the right fit or not. So what, again, to summarize, what I mean by this is, let's say you visited your a school that you have to deposit by May 1st to, but you really prefer a school that now has extended the deposit deadline till June 1st, and you think you may be able to visit one or both of them in the month of May, if the COVID emergency shutdowns and stay-at-home orders are lifted, and you can cross your fingers that will happen, hopefully, then I would say that you should seriously consider double depositing. Again, I know it's against NACAC and other best practices to say that out loud, but at the end of the day, this is a huge financial decision for students and families. And many students and families are going to be asked to spend over $200,000 all in on a four-year education. And if it goes for more than 4 years, my goodness, it can go up even more. Loans, et cetera, can last for decades. So while colleges and high schools generally tell students and families never double deposit because it can hurt your high school, it can hurt, you know, obviously it can hurt your reputation as an individual. At the end of the day, this year is the year, if there is an exception to the rule, in my mind, because so much is up in the air and you don't even know what college is really going to look like in the fall, if you may have a shot to visit a college and know more confidently what you really want to do by June 1st, and that, and one of those colleges that's on your top two list is allowing you till June 1st to make that decision, I would contact the one that you have to deposit at in May 1st first and ask, is there any way you can delay the deposit deadline for me? And if they won't do it, then I wouldn't say that I'm going to just deposit at your school, but maybe I'll pull out. I would just deposit at that school if there was any chance you would go there, and then hope and pray you can visit the other school in the month of June and see if that school is in fact a school that would be a better fit for you. Though I will say, even visiting in June, I don't think the campuses are going to feel and look the same in the month of May or June than they normally would if you got to visit and delay the deposit by date, deposit date for you even past June 1st. So just realize that too, the online tours do a lot. I would try to just, if you can, just make a definitive decision. But in many cases, students have not been able to visit college campuses since winter break or earlier because of their school schedule and then the COVID emergency. So I think that, again, I wish more colleges were being a little more flexible. The fact that they're asking a 17 or 18-year-old student to deposit by May 1st at a school they've never visited and take on potentially tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans while doing so, and they're going to look at you askance because you're going to double deposit, I think that's evil. So I personally think, forget the contract, do what you think is right as long as you're willing to lose a double deposit, one of the deposits, if you feel like you're going to need a few more weeks to make a final decision. Now, if you have two May schools, May 1 deadline schools, and you want to double deposit at those, I don't really see what the point of that is other than, you know, you're delaying the point of deciding. But again, I mean, people double deposit all the time. Colleges don't want you to know that, of course, because they don't want their enrollment numbers to be skewed so dramatically as someone in the inside would know they could be. And there's really nothing colleges can do about it if you double deposit too much, even for the similar deposit by dates. So again, I guess on a macro level, I would say double depositing is unethical, but it's far less unethical than forcing a 17 or 18-year-old, and with a family, of course, who may have doubtful financial prospects in the coming years and months, to take on thousands upon thousands of dollars of loans for a product that has changed dramatically and will likely be forever changed starting in the fall 2020 in terms of how college and university looks in the United States. Another question, my GPA and honors AP courses are low for the university I want to attend, which in this case is University of Chicago. Is it smart to just take the SATs or leave it because it's optional to show colleges that I'm able to perform well. So University of Chicago actually is one of the schools that has gone SAT or an ACT optional prior to the coronavirus / COVID-19 emergency. So the University of Chicago in happier days already made the conscious decision to not require testing because they, from a business perspective, despite what they'll tell you, they wanted to increase the number of applicants to their college. And to do so, they felt like they had reached the limit in terms of how many people would be attracted to Chicago if they had to submit test scores. So they just removed the requirement to submit test scores to get into University of Chicago. Now, with that said, I would still wager a high bet that the vast majority of students getting into University of Chicago in their test optional existence have submitted SAT and ACT and or ACT scores and submitted strong SAT and or ACT scores. But they officially don't require them anymore. So this was prior to the coronavirus. So that's going to be ongoing. I mean, Chicago is going to remain test optional, and any other college that becomes test optional during the coronavirus outbreak or response will obviously do so because they want more applicants. Does it mean that they're going to prefer applicants that are test optional over the ones that can produce strong test scores? It really will depend on the college. But what I would say is you want to look at the average test score for the college or university you're applying to and look at your test scores if you have them. And if your test scores are in the 75th percentile or higher of what that college normally reports to be their range, I would submit those scores if you have them, or if you can take the test sometime in the coming months online. Potentially they're going to start offering the SAT and ACT online in the fall, or even at home. I would take those tests just to have them in your back pocket if you want or feel like you need to submit the test scores, if you feel like you're capable of scoring in a way that would be in the top 25%. If I didn't say it correctly before, this is what I meant, the top 25th percentile, so the 75th percentile or higher for what they would normally accept at that college. If you feel like your test scores were always going to be in the lower 25th percent of scores submitted to that college or university, you were already skating on thin ice, and therefore it was not going to be a really great fit for you academically, and therefore it was probably going to be a low shot you were going to get in if it wasn't test optional. And so your best bet in those situations would be never submit test scores to a test optional school where your scores are below the average of what they accept. So again, it's always really important to remember that just because a college is test optional does not mean that the college is not reviewing many applicants with test scores and also reporting those test scores out to the ranking agencies, if you will, like U.S. News and World Report. So they still want to be able to submit very impressive test scores of students who get in to those schools. So the answer, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective, will be it depends. And I think that you should obviously continue to take practice SATs or ACTs at home. And again, look to see what that college normally would accept based off their testing range. You can go usually to collegeboard.org and type in the name of that college on their college search engine, which is called Big Future. Look to see their test averages. Both the ACT and SAT are reported on that website, and they usually report the middle 50%. So that means of the students accepted as freshmen, the middle 50% have between this score and that score. If your numbers on the practice tests or the real pass tests you've taken are in the below the middle 50% range, then I would absolutely apply test optional to that college. If you are above the middle 50% range, I would absolutely submit your scores to that college, even if it's test optional. If you're in the middle 50%, between 25th percentile and 75th percentile, what they would normally accept based off test scores, that's where you're going to have to look at your extracurricular resume, your GPA, and just the overall selectivity of the school and anything else you may have in terms of a hook in terms of getting in to determine whether or not it would be more risky to submit your scores or more risky not to submit your scores. But again, big picture, not just in the case of the University of Chicago, many more colleges have gone test optional for class of 2021 because they are frightened to death that fewer kids will come back in the fall from the previous grades that were already there, but also that fewer freshmen will show up this fall and that fewer students will apply for 2021. So they are doing everything they can to gird for disaster. And that's why they're really removing the tests requirements at schools like Cornell and Tufts, I mean, these are schools that, in the case of Tufts, I mean, gosh, Tufts must be in a really tough situation, because even though they have some really impressive name recognition, they must fear the bottom is going to fall out of their application numbers if they don't go test optional. And for a school like Tufts to do that, I mean, Tufts has to be frightened, because how can Tufts at this point be considered as selective anymore? It can't be if it's test optional. But they're willing to take the hit to their quote-unquote selectivity because they are that fearful that the number of students who are going to apply is going to plummet. And as I've seen written somewhere that playing second fiddle to schools like Princeton and Harvard and Yale is not enough in this economic environment for schools like Tufts to not seriously consider going test optional. It is very possible that if this emergency goes on a few more weeks, all the Ivies may go test optional. And if that happens, that is going to do real interesting damage to their overall reputations. Because again, at that point, it's nothing but, as they say, Studio 54. It's nothing but a club. They're not really selective institutions anymore, because they're going to be accepting students who had at least a semester worth of grades that were probably pass-fail or dubious at best. And they're not going to require test scores of students in the class of 2021 either. So it's not anything other than a popularity contest and a nightclub. That's all it is. And so for colleges to make that decision, even in an emergency, indicates that they are skating on thin ice, potentially financially. And obviously Tufts endowment is not going to be what Penn's and Harvard's and Yale's are. So I got to believe that some will not acquiesce to the test optional movement, even in an emergency, because they know their selectivity is all they've got going for them. And of course, their endowments, which are hedge funds. So another question that I wanted to cover before we wrap up is, let me bring it up here, is gap year community college. Traditionally, most colleges and universities that are highly selective for freshmen, not all, but most, are usually far less selective for transfer students. So again, if there was ever a year to seriously consider community college, even if you had never considered it before, this may be the year, because many colleges and universities have always been and will continue to be far less selective to get into after you've achieved a certain number of college credits, i.e. applying as a transfer student. So if you feel like you're going to have to go to a very expensive college far away for $60,000, $50,000 tuition just to get an online class with a handful of students a number of times a week and no residential experience, you may do the calculus in your head and say, you know what, I really would prefer to stay at home locally, do my community college locally, either in person or at home or online, get great grades for a semester, a year and a half, maybe even two, and then apply to what was my dream university or two or three or four as a transfer student, because I may have a better shot of getting in, and I also won't be blowing so much money for the first year or two of college. Now, obviously, this type of advice only should be taken as general advice. In your unique situation, you may have colleges on your top dream list or schools you've already been accepted to that are actually harder to get in as a transfer student, in which case it would make no sense to delay going as a fall freshman, even if you're online, if you feel like your chances of getting into that college ever again will go down to zero or close to it. But if you didn't get into your dream college for this fall and you're in the class of 2020, this may be the year to sort of hold back and start classes online in a community college setting and try your hand at applying with hopefully stronger grades, stronger overall application in semester two, three, or four. And at that point, you may have a much, much better shot of getting into the college you always dreamed of getting into, but maybe you didn't get into this year because you realized it was your dream college too late, or you just were rejected this year and you want to try your hand at getting in as a transfer student. As for a gap year, you know, what that gap year looks like will in many ways determine my recommendation as to whether or not a gap year would actually make sense at this point. Some gap years are wonderful ideas because you can grow and learn a lot through that gap year. Other gap years turn into really bad experiences for students because they do nothing productive and they develop very bad habits. And so gap years can go one way or the other. Because there are a few outside of the home things you could really do during the gap year ahead, depending on if this crisis lasts into the summer or fall, I would say that you really want to have a good plan as to what you would do during a gap year before I would be willing to bless it as a good idea, because you want to be able to make hay of that gap year, grow as a person, grow as an individual, but also grow as a student, an intellectual, as potentially a business person, as something, grow in a professional way, also grow in a personal way. So if you don't have a plan going into a gap year can be a real risk. Like I said, even if the COVID emergency continues, there are still opportunities to make money both online and in the real world. And especially if you're 17, 18, 19 years old, you are going to be at lower risk, most likely, as long as you don't have an underlying condition, of developing illness from this virus than those older than you. So you should be a little braver, as long as you know your health and you're being careful about going out into the real world and trying new things during a gap year experience. Again, there could be a lot of money to be made for even if you want to be a shopper, a personal shopper for someone, all the people on your street. There are things you could be doing now to make money for college, and or you could develop a business while you do take a gap year as you debate what type of college you want to apply to in the future, once hopefully they turn into more residential traditional college experiences again, in the event they don't do so for this fall or the year ahead. So I have one more topic that I wanted to cover, and that was for juniors, for current high school juniors. You should be really thankful that you were born the year you were, because again, as I've indicated, the class of 2020 got short shrift, but the class of 2021 is going to have many more options to get into colleges that were once much more selective, because many of them have gone test optional. But even if they haven't gone test optional, the fact of the matter is colleges are going to have to be a little less selective across the board, because many students will be applying with less of a rigorous curriculum than their classmates from earlier years, because half of the school year was really damaged a great deal because of the coronavirus emergency. Many school systems and schools went to a pass-fail model. Other schools are going to have far fewer just days of school and content hours because of the transition to online learning. So I think that the class of 2021 is going to have the pick of the litter in terms of colleges, because many students have been wiped out financially, which is a horrible thing. Their families have been wiped out, not by the virus as much as by the decisions from political leaders to close down whole regions and countries and states. And so they're not going to be able to apply to the colleges or be as interested in applying to a lot of colleges that are also in tough financial situations and pay such hefty tuition. So those students who have the money still from their family background and who really want to get into a selective college or university, I think are actually going to have many more options in the year ahead for fall 2021 entry than the students in the class of 2020 did for fall 2020 entry. Those are the breaks. Hopefully this whole pandemic will go away and things can go back to the way they were, the good things that were. Though again, I'm somewhat of a cynic in the sense that college as it exists in the United States was already a really corrupt, cynical, and highly expensive for the value added experience for families and students to go through. So maybe good will come of this experience, and the actual education experience can be reformed, and maybe also the cost structure for families can be reformed. So quality education can be available to a greater diversity of the population for a cost that is more realistic to what many families who want to be educated and their students who want to be educated can afford. So that's what I wanted to cover. If you are a high school senior or a parent of a high school senior, my thoughts and prayers are with you, because there are a lot of questions. No one talking to you in April or May of 2020 can really say with any certainty what fall of 2020 will look like in terms of colleges and universities in the United States. But there is, in many cases, a lot of money on the line. So I want you to think long and hard about if where you think you want to go in the fall really makes sense for you based off of the new value proposition of potentially taking those classes online from home as opposed to going to that college campus. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that an emergency like this has changed your value system or changed your perspective, and that it is okay to no longer value what you thought you valued a few months ago and change your mind. There's nothing wrong with changing your mind. Better to change your mind and be brave and courageous about changing your mind now than realize it after you've already sunk a lot of money into an experience you were already having some doubts about. So think about that long and hard. There are other paths to success than going to the college you thought you were going to go to a few months ago. You can always start at a community college. You can always take a gap year. You can always start at a local university that's still accepting students for far less money and maybe transition to another college or university later on and get that degree from that college or university. So there are a lot of opportunities out there. And also maybe this will give students pause about the idea that college is a prerequisite to what you want to do at all. Obviously, if you want to become a doctor, if you want to become a nurse, you want to become certain certain careers, you do have to earn a particular degree and you have to go to a college to attain that. Though sometimes you can do so online for much less. But for many careers and many professions, a college degree is not required, even though the powers that be would want to make you think it is. And so maybe this whole emergency, you may not need to go to college at all, and there's no rush to doing so. So I'm seeing again that my connection is unstable. So again, I apologize if I broke up, but again, maybe the silver lining in all this is that you question if college is even worth it for you at all. And there's nothing wrong with questioning that. Thinking about that long and hard before you set foot on a college campus is far wiser in any environment, pandemic or otherwise, than jumping into something just because you're doing it, because your friends are doing it, your parents told you to do it, or because of the prestige of getting into a particular college or university. Maybe college isn't for you to begin with and never was. And this pandemic situation has allowed you to take a step back and realize you want to do something else with your life. And more power to you if you feel like that is what you life has in store for you. So with that in mind, I thank all of those who watch this YouTube live with me tonight. I will make sure to keep this YouTube live online for at least a few days for those families who cannot attend live. If you are interested in working with a college admissions expert one-on-one, you can always go to collegemeister.com and learn more about my services. I wish you all the best, no matter what grade in high school you're in, or if you're a parent of a student in high school. And I understand this is a very tough time to be making a decision about a college or university. And I wish you nothing but the best as you make this decision over the coming weeks and months, and as you go through your college admissions process for the first time or the second time over the coming months as we approach the fall of 2020. I wish you all the best. Stay safe, stay well. Stay well, and definitely visit me at collegemeister.com, collegemeister.com, to learn more about personalized college admissions advice. Have a great night.